The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. This is the February 2023 issue of the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. And the first article is called, When the Cough Won't Quit, Causes of Chronic Cough. A chronic cough, a cough that lasts for at least 8 weeks, is no joke. You may be embarrassed if you can't stop coughing in public. It's tough to get enough sleep in between nighttime coughing fits. Persistent coughing also can lead to fainting, headaches, urinary leakage, and even cracked ribs. Finding relief from chronic coughing can be challenging. There are many possible causes, and there may be multiple contributing factors. Ideally, your healthcare team will identify the underlying problem and successfully treat it. But the process can involve multiple tests and treatment trials, says Sumaira Ahmad, MBBS, a Mayo Clinic pulmonary and critical care specialist. The path to correct diagnosis and treatment may not always be straightforward, Dr. Ahmad says. It often involves systematically eliminating possible causes. Sometimes a cause is diagnosed and treated, but the cough persists. This may mean that there is another contributing condition. Other times, a care team can rule out the common causes of cough, but can't pinpoint a cause. In these situations, it's possible that a phenomenon known as cough hypersensitivity syndrome, or CHS, is at play, especially if the cough has been present for more than 6 months. There are treatment options that may provide relief. Although it can be annoying, coughing serves an important purpose. It clears your airways of food, mucus, and harmful gases. It keeps the breathing tubes open so you can receive oxygen. It also expels irritants from your lungs and airways, sweeping out germs and other harmful substances. If you have pneumonia, catch a viral infection, or inhale something irritating or harmful into your lungs, then coughing is an appropriate response, says Dr. Ahmad. Coughing occurs when something irritates the cough receptors, which are located on nerve endings lining the voice box, windpipe, and main airways. Mechanical cough receptors may be stimulated by mucus or dust. Other cough receptors are triggered by certain chemicals like capsaicin found in hot chili peppers. When triggered, the receptors transmit signals up the vagus nerve to the brain. The brain processes this information and returns messages, coordinating the voice box and breathing muscles to cough. This signaling differs depending on the type of cough. Sometimes you cough as a reflex, like when you choke on your drink, or you may feel an urge to cough, a sensation like a scratch or tickle in your throat, and then do so voluntarily. The main difference is the neural wiring, says Dr. Ahmad. For the reflex cough, the signals probably go up the brainstem, but the voluntary cough signals likely go up to the higher brain centers and generate the sensation that you need to cough. Your healthcare team may first address possible causes of chronic cough. These include smoking, use of inhaled recreational drugs like cannabis, certain health, heart and lung diseases, cancer, and medications like angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors, also called ACE inhibitors. ACE inhibitors often are prescribed for high blood pressure and heart failure and can cause chronic cough. While upper respiratory infection commonly produces a cough, the cough typically doesn't last more than 8 weeks. Outside of these causes, common reasons for a lingering cough include gastroesophageal reflux disease. GERD is a chronic condition in which stomach acid flows back up into the esophagus. Exactly why GERD may trigger coughing is not clearly understood. One theory is that those with GERD breathe in tiny amounts of the acid that is reflux. GERD could be the cause of a cough even if you don't have typical reflux symptoms. Another is upper airway cough syndrome. Upper airway cough syndrome was previously called post-nasal drip. People with upper airway cough syndrome often feel like excess mucus is dripping down the back of their throat. This drainage, usually from allergies or inflamed sinuses, is thought to stimulate cough receptors. Then there's asthma. If you have asthma, you might have a cough that comes and goes with the seasons, or shows up after a cold or other infection. In a type of asthma known as cough variant asthma, a cough is the main symptom. Eosinophilic bronchitis is a related inflammatory condition that may cause chronic cough. To find the cause of your cough, your care team may use imaging tests, lung function tests, and lab tests to analyze coughed up mucus. You may undergo a scope test called a bronchoscopy, which uses a thin tube with a light and camera to inspect your lungs and air passages. Alternatively, you may start a treatment trial for a common cause of cough before undergoing testing. GERD may also require modifying your diet, or a medication like a proton pump inhibitor may be recommended. Nasal steroids and sinus rinses, like using a neti pot, can be very helpful for UACS, remember that's upper airway cough syndrome. Proper use of inhalers and short courses of oral steroids can help with cough from asthma or eosinophilic bronchitis. It's common to address a combination of these problems when treating chronic cough. If a diagnostic workup does not confirm a cause of your cough, or if treatment for your cough is not successful, you may have CHS, which means cough hypersensitivity syndrome. CHS is called neurogenic cough or laryngeal hypersensitivity and seems to be a problem with the nerves and brain signals involved in coughing. When the cough receptors become too sensitive or the brain processes the signals incorrectly, you can experience the urge to cough even though nothing or something very minor is irritating your throat. This leads to symptoms also seen with other causes of cough, like allotussia. This is coughing in response to mild irritants that don't typically trigger a cough, like talking or changes in humidity. Then there's hypertussia. This means coughing more intensely, including after minor exposure to typical triggers like cold air, dust, or aerosols. Then there's laryngeal paresthesia. This is a sensation in the throat, airway, and chest that can make it feel like you need to cough. This includes sensations like an itch, a tickle, a scratch in your throat, a chest tightness, or the feeling that you're choking. One reason for this hypersensitivity can be damage to nerves like the vagus nerve. This damage may be caused by a virus or may possibly occur as a result of chronic coughing with flare-ups of GERD, UACS, or asthma. 46% of people referred to specialty cough clinics have CHS. A diagnosis of CHS does not negate the need for a thorough diagnostic exploration of chronic cough. There are potentially helpful treatment options for CHS that can be used alone or in combination. One is neuromodulator medications, and these include gabapentin or Neurontin, amitriptyline, and pregabalin or Lyrica. These may dampen the urge to cough. The goal is not to get rid of the ability to cough, but to reset the urge to cough. You may have some side effects like drowsiness, fatigue, and nausea with these medications, and multiple medications may need to be tried to find a good fit. Another option is physiotherapy and speech and language therapy intervention. This teaches you to resist and prevent the urge to cough with lifestyle and behavioral changes. Measures can include drinking water, inhaling steam, avoiding caffeine and alcohol, and breathing through your nose. You also may learn breathing techniques and other strategies to help you suppress coughing. There are alternative treatments reserved for certain situations, like vocal cord treatments. Be sure to partner with your healthcare team to find effective treatment for your cough. Let your provider know if a treatment is too expensive or time intensive, or if you experience bothersome side effects. And if the treatment doesn't bring relief, talk to your care team about referral to a pulmonologist, a doctor who specializes in lung health, or a specialty cough clinic. Next is a shorter article entitled News and Our Views. And this article states, vitamin D supplements still are important for many people. Vitamin D is a nutrient the body needs for many reasons, including building and maintaining healthy bones. The benefits and possible risks of taking vitamin D supplements continue to be debated. A recent study cast doubt on the effectiveness of supplements in one key area, reducing the risk of broken bones in older adults. Mayo Clinic experts point to strong evidence of the supplement's continued health benefits for people with osteoporosis or other bone-thinning conditions. The study in the July 28, 2022 New England Journal of Medicine included 25,000 men and women 50 and older. Having osteoporosis or other bone loss was not required to be part of the study. Half were given a vitamin D supplement of 2,000 international units per day. The other half were given placebo. 43% of the placebo group also reported taking vitamin D supplements on their own. Over a five-year span, both groups had a nearly identical risk of fracture. Vitamin D did not appear to have different effects on fracture risks in subgroups based on age, sex, weight, or presence of osteoporosis. As a result, the study generated media buzz, with some calling vitamin D overrated or even useless. Mayo Clinic experts say the study needs to be read in context. Very few participants had a vitamin D deficiency when they entered the study. It's expected that people with adequate levels wouldn't see additional benefits from supplements at doses higher than the recommended daily allowance of 600 to 800 international units. Other research demonstrates significant benefits to bone health and fracture risk reduction in people who are deficient. Vitamin D also regulates many other cellular functions and supports immune health, muscle function, and brain cell activity. Those benefits often make vitamin D supplementation a good option in people who don't get adequate vitamin D from the sun or their diets. Still, talk to your healthcare team before you begin taking any dietary supplement. And then here's another interesting shorter article in News and Our Views, and it's entitled, Bypass May Be a Good Option for Adults Over 80. Coronary artery bypass graft surgery is an important treatment option for blocked or partially blocked arteries. It can improve heart function, ease symptoms like chest pain, and lower the risk of death from heart disease. But it's traditionally performed as open heart surgery and comes with a risk of complications like bleeding, infection, stroke, and heart attack. As such, adults over 80 typically have been considered better candidates for alternative, lower-risk treatments. But a recent study from the Mayo Clinic published in Mayo Clinic Proceedings demonstrated that bypass surgery may be a good option for some adults over 80. The study looked back at almost 1,300 coronary artery bypass graft surgeries that had been performed in people over 80 at Mayo Clinic from 1993 to 2019. In coronary artery bypass grafting, surgeons use veins or arteries collected from elsewhere in the body, like the chest wall, the legs, or arms, to route blood around the problem coronary artery. The median survival time after surgery was 7.6 years, meaning that half of surgery recipients died before that point, and half lived beyond it. That was longer than the 6-year median survival time of adults 80 and older in the general population. However, surgical candidates were probably carefully selected, otherwise healthy people. Risk factors linked to shorter survival time after surgery included diabetes, a suppressed immune system, smoking, older age, and a recent irregular heartbeat called atrial fibrillation or atrial flutter. Overall, the surgical death rate was 4%, but this rate decreased over time and was less than 1% by the study's final years. Our results show that coronary artery bypass surgery can be beneficial for people over age 80, says Kyukbin Choi, MD, a Mayo Clinic clinical fellow in cardiovascular surgery and the study's first author. The key is to carefully identify people who can most benefit from the procedure. That's what future research can help with, to identify those who can most benefit. Now, again in the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, we're going to turn to another article in the February 2023 issue entitled Otosclerosis, O-T-O-S-C-L-E-R-O-S-I-S. You watch the lip moves, but you can't quite make out the words. It happens with waiters, with the clerk at the drugstore, even at church. The minister's sermon gets nods from other parishioners. You wish you could agree, except that the sermon sounds distant and mumbled. Hearing loss is a common problem with many different causes. One cause is otosclerosis, a growth of bony tissue in the middle ear that immobilizes ear structures and impairs sound transmission. The hearing loss gradually progresses. It first involves the lower frequencies, but can progress to involve all frequencies. As the hearing loss worsens, most people experience ringing, roaring, buzzing, or hissing in the ears or head, called tinnitus. Dizziness also may occur. Hearing loss may be severe. The middle ear contains three tiny bones, which form a bridge between the eardrum and the inner ear. They are the malleus, or hammer. This bone is attached to the eardrum. The incus, or anvil, which is the middle in the chain of bones, and the stapes, or stirrup. This bone is attached to the oval window, a membrane-covered opening that connects the middle ear to the inner ear. The vibration of the eardrum triggers a chain of movements through these bones. Because of the different sizes, shapes, and positions of the three bones, the force of the vibration increases by the time it reaches the inner ear. This transfers the energy of the sound wave to the fluid of the inner ear. There, the sound wave is converted into electrical signals that are sent along the auditory nerve to the brain, where they are distinctly processed. There are two primary types of hearing loss: sensory neural and conductive. Sensory neural hearing loss, like age or noise-related hearing loss, is more common in adults and involves damage to the hair cells or nerves in the inner ear. It usually can't be reversed. Otosclerosis falls under the category of conductive hearing loss. Conductive hearing loss occurs when the tiny bones of the middle ear don't move freely. This type sometimes can be treated. Otosclerosis is thought to be a genetic disorder. Although the cause is not well understood, the disease involves rapid bone rebuilding in the tiny bones of the middle ear. As the disease progresses, the overgrowth of bone effectively freezes the stirrup, which rests against the entrance to the inner ear. As a result, the sound waves can't reach the inner ear. Most often, it affects both ears. Slowly progressive hearing loss is the most prominent symptom of otosclerosis. Hearing tests assess your degree of hearing loss and determine whether it is the result of otosclerosis or another cause. These include tests of hearing sensitivity and sound conduction in the middle ear. A CT scan may be needed to confirm the diagnosis and rule out other causes of hearing loss. The degree of your hearing loss determines your treatment plan. A watch and wait approach may be advised if hearing loss is mild. Hearing aids are generally very effective and often a first treatment option. A hearing aid may boost sound so that it's loud enough to overcome stiff middle ear bones. For people not able or not willing to wear hearing aids, or if hearing loss is more troublesome, a surgery called stapedectomy may help. The operation is done through the ear canal under local or general anesthesia. The stapes that's no longer moving is partly or completely removed. Then a small prosthetic device called a piston, P-I-S-T-O-N, is placed through the oval window and attached to the incus with a wire. A tiny piece of tissue, usually taken from behind the ear, may be placed around the piston to seal the opening. The piston then conducts sound vibration to the inner ear. In some instances, a different surgical procedure may be used. About 90% of people who have this surgery regain functional hearing without hearing aids, and the hearing improvement is usually permanent. Improvement may not be noticeable until about 3 to 6 weeks after surgery. Maximum hearing improvement is usually at about 3 to 6 months after surgery. When otosclerosis affects both ears, stapes surgery on your other ear may be done 6 to 12 months after the procedure on the initial ear, provided the first surgery was successful. There is a small risk, 1 to 2%, that total hearing loss will occur in that ear, or that balance problems or dizziness may occur after surgery. But the small number of people who aren't helped by surgery can often benefit from a hearing aid. Now here's another short article called Mediterranean Diet Benefits Beyond the Heart. And this again is the Mayo Clinic Health Letter in February. For decades, researchers have demonstrated the Mediterranean diet's benefits to heart health and longevity. The diet is a way of eating that's based on traditional cuisines of Greece, Italy, and other countries bordering the Mediterranean Sea. Plant-based foods like whole grains, vegetables, legumes like beans and lentils, fruits, nuts, and seeds, herbs, and spices are the foundation of the diet. Olive oil is the main source of added fat. Recent studies have found benefits of the diet that go beyond the heart, including relieving pain. A study of older adults in Spain found that people who followed the diet, plus its accompanying focus on physical activity and healthy socializing, reported improvements in chronic pain over those who lived less in line with the diet and its related healthy behaviors. Boosting strength. A large study in Boston found that older adults who strictly followed the diet significantly reduced their risk of frailty as they aged. This was particularly noticeable with one component of the diet, eating brightly colored fruits and vegetables high in antioxidants called carotenoids. A study in Australia found that people with depression showed improved symptoms and decreased severity of disease when following a Mediterranean diet, compared with those who didn't change their diet. Finally, restoring liver function. A review of existing studies found that switching to a Mediterranean diet significantly improves the severity of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. The improvement was especially strong when people lost weight as a result of being on the diet. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.